Hey, everybody. Welcome to our new series called The Quarantine Sessions. We have a special guest with us, actually, this week.
Yeah, we are about to bring in friend of the podcast, John Armstrong, who literally just got back to LA after being stranded. Everyone's nightmare right now, being stranded on a cruise ship for, I think, just over two straight weeks. It was the last, possibly one of the last cruise ships at sea, definitely the last Disney cruise ship at sea. Just got back. We're going to hear about his crazy experience.
Yeah, check it out. We're going to have some more, a whole bunch more interviews coming up in the coming weeks in this new series, The Quarantine Sessions, with special guests. And we're just going to see who's not doing anything, sitting around working on stuff, and wants to chat with two magicians in their houses. So.
You are listening to Two Magicians, One Mic.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Two Magicians, One Mic. We're just going to jump right in here. We got the amazing and surviving John Armstrong from Disney Cruise Line. John, how are you?
Hello. How's everybody?
Yeah, welcome back. When did you get back, John?
Yesterday.
Holy shit. So what happened? Breaking news. Live from the not the ocean anymore.
Live from not the ocean anymore. So I was on what is called a repositioning cruise. So that's where they move the ship from one location where they've been doing multiple cruises out of to another location where they're going to do multiple cruises out of. Usually on a repo, especially one of that distance, because you're going from, in this case, New Orleans to San Diego, that you would have to be like about 14 days through the Panama Canal and all that sort of thing. So with that much time, you're going to have to switch out the variety entertainers multiple times, more than you would on a normal cruise. Now, the way Disney works is that the main stage performances, the guests, the variety acts, don't do more than one main stage performance. They do other shows. They perform in like there's an adult show, and there's like sometimes you can do like a workshop, things like that. But for the most part, you do your main show once, or at least a couple times, but you never repeat a main show.
And the main show is a standard 45 minute type deal, as per most
right in the Walt Disney Theater. Yeah. So because there's their standard shows that Disney provides, the Broadway caliber shows that they do. And then, so you have to think about that. They have three of those usually a ship. So, and then maybe they might be able to do like a fourth show. So now you have another 10 days to fill of entertainment. All the other variety acts are basically going to do that. And then I think there was a movie premiere one night too, Onward premiered while we were there. So long story short, I would have been one of, I think, eight, if not nine, variety acts that would have rotated out through the system that time, depending on what port we were at.
That's actually an interesting ratio as well, because most ships have way more kind of inbuilt shows and fewer variety acts that rotate through, who normally do two main stage shows each. So it sounds like Disney has a much higher ratio of different variety performers cycling through for a time period.
Yeah, exactly. So you not only you had the normal amount of just like, I guess, Disney level of what they want, but you also had essentially, you know, like all these extra days to fill. So I'm on for the first 5 days of the cruise, me and my wife, and we're expecting a child.
That's public now?
I don't talk. I don't like, we don't post it on Facebook, but we just don't. You know, talk about it on Facebook, but no, we're not like hiding it. I mean, if you look at her, you can kind of tell. so
been too long since we hung out.
Yeah. The joke she was making is by the end of it, the end of the 14 days, she was like, I don't know if this is because the baby is getting bigger or I just had ice cream twice a day for the last 14 days. I was supposed to leave 5 days later. One variety act had already switched out. Two variety acts got on the ship. gentleman by the name of Heath Hike, who's like a comedian, prop comic. And it's hard to explain his show, but it's a lot of fun. And then he has his show. And then he left. And then another act that was like a vocal, percussion sort of like, acoustic singers came on in at that point. And then now we are the only two variety acts, because I'm going to leave 5 days into the cruise in Colombia, and then a whole slew of variety acts are going to come on. John Charles, who's like this well-known Disney act, and who's like a singing comedian kind of guy, and this a stunt like jump rope crew, I think another act who was like Michael Harrison, who's like a ventriloquist. So anyway, so all these acts are going to come on and we're going to come off. So we're told, okay, so cut two, they have what's called a bright star, which means that you hear this announcement over the loudspeakers that someone's having a big medical issue. That medical issue turns out to be that a gentleman had a heart attack or something like that. And they needed to actually go back to Grand Cayman to make sure that he could get off and get proper medical attention, which is what the right thing to do. And of course, that's what you do. So what ends up happening is that then we are then late getting into Colombia, because we're supposed to go into Colombia and have a very short port day in Colombia, which is where we're going to get off. Other acts are going to go on. They're going to redo some supplies, the whole nine yards, before they start into the Panama Canal. And the whole part and the whole deal is that the Panama Canal is you have to have your time and go in during your time. If you don't go in through the Panama Canal during your time, you miss your time. And then that means you have to go back in the back of the line, which could be like 6-7 days away from where you're supposed to get in. So they're like, well, we're going to miss the protocol, but we'll come have a short stop in Colombia so that we can actually get people on and get people off and get supplies and so on and so forth. So they tell us to do the normal thing where we go down and we wait. And Vanessa, my wife, and this other act, and we're waiting. And more and more that we're down there, we're realizing, yeah, this isn't looking the way this normally should. And there are people who in Spanish, which I don't speak, but are basically in very loud, very terse voices, yelling into phones and to each other. There's people, our passports with our documentation in it, which are being handled by basically what they call the shoreside, sort of like immigration type folks. Yep. Who deal with all that, are going in and out of onto tables. Like literally they'll be in as we're going to go, and then you go back out and land on a table again. And then we go back into the basket. And they're like going to take us, and then they're like, all right, we're going to go. And then another phone call would happen. Literally, no joke, like a half an hour before we got there, there had been a ship that had come in, guests had gone off, and two of them had the coronavirus. Mm. The port agent, and then finally, the governor of the area, and then essentially the president of the country had decided that they're going to close off the ports. And they're now trying to figure, they're going to let us in still and let the other acts on still at this point. And they're like, the president tells us we can't do it, so we can't do it anymore.
Because he's there.
So, wow. Yeah.
You arrived right in the middle of a port closure in progress.
Right in the middle of port closure. Yeah. So that's what's happening. So now we can't get into that port. So they say to us, well, guys, I don't know, I'm sorry. And before this, just back up just a tad, the assistant cruise director had asked me, because we're going to get into it, basically that day would end up being a sea day. The day that was normally going to be a port day, because we're going to get off for a little while, had now been turned to a sea day, even if we were getting on and get off. And he had asked me if I would be okay with doing like a close-up show, like earlier and then, the early, late morning, early afternoon before I got off the ship. I said, sure, of course, no problem. I'll add an extra show, not a big deal. And so I had just finished a show, packed up my stuff, and had gotten down there between now waiting all this time. So now we can't leave the ship. And they're like, well, we're going to try to get you off in Panama the next day before we get you into to the canal. And I said, okay, sure. What can you do? So I get in and I'm like, well, I'm going to be here an extra day. Not a big deal. And we figure things out and we're looking at arrangements, whatever. Because meanwhile, I'm supposed to leave from this ship, go from Colombia, go back to LA for like a second, repack some stuff, and then go out to Tahoe to do the loft in Tahoe for 2 weeks. That is what my schedule was originally supposed to be. So now we get to Panama and Panama's like, nope, absolutely not. No one's getting on. No one's getting off. No way. It's not happening. So now we're like, we have to wait in the Panama Canal to go through the Panama Canal all the way to the next set of ports, which the next port's going to be 6 days later in Puerto Vallarta, Mexico.
Yeah. Panama Canal. Once you're in, you're in.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. So that's what's being told to me, and we're and they're freaking out because the cruise directors, who are amazing, who are brilliant, and the entire staff. And I'm not just saying this to suck up or because, you know, whatever. No, no. These people worked diligently to do something that to pull entertainment essentially out of thin air. It was incredible. And they are applauded. And I got to say something else about the cruise like staff as well as the guests. The guests overall, the reason I love working for Disney so much is that the guests understood, got it, and went along with it. They didn't stand in lines to complain about things. They actually were like, yeah, we get it. Well, hey, what can you do? All right, we'll help. Well, can we help? Is there anything we can do to help? It's amazing.
Wow. That's really nice.
It's amazing. So I'll get to a story about that in a second. But so now the cruise director is like, she's pulling her hair out. The assistant cruise director is like, I don't know what to do. We're supposed to bring flight crew on. They're going to do the adult show. And I go, don't worry about it. I'll do the adult show. And this is like literally, I'm being told we're down there with our luggage. We can't leave. We're being told that, you know, that we're going to be stuck on the ship for at least six more days. And I'm like, no, I'll do the adult show. I got it. I can do the adult show. And they're like, seriously? Because that would really put some pressure on us so we could figure out the rest of the time. Nope, got it. I got it. So I do the adult show. And how it works is you do one adult show because cruises like this, there's a very large amount of adults, more so than probably average Disney cruise. I had to do the show twice in where they do it. So I do it once. Another show happens, and then I do it again. So I did two more shows. So now if you are counting, I've done my adult, my normal theater show, which is twice doing 45 minutes. I have done my normal adult show twice. I have done a workshop once. I've done a close-up show once. And now I have done I've done a close-up show, another close-up show. So I've done two close-up shows, and now I'm doing the adult show twice. And they are obviously very happy. And at the meantime, there is the other act, this act that was there as well. And they're refusing to help out in any way whatsoever. They go back to their cabins. They're like, we refuse. And then they finally, at one point during the cruise, decide, hey, you know what we're going to do? We see the situation. We get it. Can we do a show for you? And they're like, oh, my God. Oh, yes. Great. We'll do. Yeah, we'll put you in the theater. It'll be great. We need another night of the theater. That sounds awesome. And they're like, okay, great. We're going to. And then literally minutes later, the agent from shore contacts the ship and says, okay, great. For that's going to cost you $10,000.
Wow.
We were like, you got to be out of your minds. So they obviously did not do that. It was amazing. So while this is all going on.
That's what back in corporate we used to call a career limiting move.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No. They have definitely sealed their fates with the Walt Disney Company.
Yeah.
I mean, it's kind of amazing. So they do that. At the same time, there is a dance act, like literally the people who are on the ship. Like Disney doesn't normally have like a lot of cruise ships do, where they have like dancers that come on and like teach ballroom classes and things like that. That's not a normal Disney thing. But on these longer cruises, like I said, that are more adult based, they have these ballroom dancers. And so they are volunteering to do stuff. So on the last day of the, so I am now, as we go through, they're asking me, is there anything else you could do? And I said, yeah, we could put together maybe like a variety show or something. I could do another close-up show. So I ended up doing, so by the time that I get to this show, I have done two separate close-up shows, one workshop, the adult show twice, so two adult shows, my normal family show, and now I'm going to add yet another close-up show, the workshop, and now I'm going to go in and do basically a 25-minute set with the dancers, William and Natalia, doing their dance act, basically, which went over amazingly, I got to say, because they're really great entertainers and super fun people. So
wait, as in you did a 25 minutes, they did a 25 minutes, like you alternated?
Basically, more like they came out and did like a segment that I hosted. Like we did like a segment, and then they did their segment. They brought me on. I came on and did essentially a 25-minute chunk, and then they closed with one number at the end. Yeah.
Oh, nice. So it was almost like you emceed a 2-act palace show, one of which was yourself.
Yeah, it's exactly what it was. And this is now me. So going around, so they're like, okay, show's in, we got to do it, please do this. And we're like, great. So me and William, who is the head of like the two dancers, we're coming up with bits to work with each other on, because we did like bits in each other's shows.
Yeah.
Coming up with bits, we're writing stuff out. They were very lenient. Disney, notorious and rightly so, for being very particular about what they put on their stages and things like that, where they're like, look, as long as you don't punch any children or say the C word, you know, because you're never allowed to say the C word on stage. In this case, the C word was coronavirus. As long as you don't say the C word, then, we're game. Just, you're both smart.
The state of emergency, we're relaxing the content policies a little.
Yeah, well, we're gonna let you play, but realize there's still
three because in the audience. The week before we got anybody who's worked for Disney got a mass email saying you couldn't use borrowed objects. I think they took out balloons, which was a thing. Yeah. Couldn't touch spectators. Like this was before the coronavirus was a thing, so that is already severely limiting as a magician.
To be fair, that actually was directly related to corona type stuff. It was. So okay. That's that mandate happened when I was on the ship, and that was directly related to just like not being in physical contact with items and bringing things back and spreading diseases and things like that. So I don't know if that's going to stay permanently or not, but at this point, that is definitely so.
Isn't that how like a bunch of bar mitzvahs already are for people who have worked those like super orthodox rules about you can't like use money or touch anyone or something like that?
Yeah, absolutely. I've done very strict bar mitzvahs, bat mitzvahs. I've done that. And
Judaism ahead of the game, ready for coronavirus.
Exactly. Who would have thought
for 3,000 years?
Who would have thought extreme sexism would help spread disease?
They're going to use that now as a motto.
Yeah.
So you're doing bits in each other's in other acts, which is great.
Right. We're writing stuff out, and then I write, and I'm not joking, guys. I can't say that everything that I did, like I'm so excited to share with the world, my amazing genius just like sprung forth with amazing magic ideas. No, that did not happen. There are props that I use in my normal show that I have purposely designed in the sense that when I bring them with me, I can get something else out of them in an emergency. So an example, I do this thing where I use a hole-in-one tray and it involves a chop cup. And I use a chop cup for this method for the end of this gag that I do.
For those who don't know, a hole-in-one tray, this is the very old apparatus. It's an impressively complex mechanical trick to get a cup into a ball, essentially. Yeah.
Cool. So I've come up with a routine with it that I think is pretty fun, and Lovick's now doing his take on my routine, and it's fun. But anyway, the point is that I do that, but I had the chop cup, and I know that I had that chop cup, and I actually bring an extra set of regular chop cup balls and like a little bit large ball load just so I have that in case I need that, because I can, that's, they didn't see the chop cup. They just saw this one gag thing. So it's not going to feel the same way. Same thing is I have a vanishing bottle. I use in a very different way than the old, you know, hackneyed, extremely hackneyed, extremely hack. Look, look, the bottle's gone. Now it's back, you know, all that type of stuff. But I did that. I have that bottle, so I did it.
Of all That's the time,
it's amazing how the hack material just comes into play when you need it.
It was just there.
One of the good things about side note about doing original material is if you ever need material in an emergency, all the hack stuff is still there.
It's at your hand. It's at your disposal.
It's not part of it's already there.
Oh no. I brought a guy up on stage and I did a card trick, and I'm telling you, that card went on my forehead. Let me tell you, that card was on my forehead. And so, you know, and I did, you know, then I did like, you know, I channeled my mentor, I channeled Terry Ward. Did his basically his card to pocket routine, you know, that
which I do.
You know?
I do it all the time, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
he put it out. He put it out for purchase. I highly recommend it for anybody to get.
I paid him when I was 16 to teach that to me. So you know, I've had that for years.
You out of all people should be able to get it for free. It's okay.
Yeah. No. I. So you know, he. So I did that. You know, and. It went over well, and I did. There was a couple bits.
Card to pocket. Let's look this up. Okay, adding
it's on his Art of Play DVD. It's a good take and a good way to do callbacks for that that routine for that trick that essentially is like the using the Williamson move with the 51 cards to pocket. But anyway, so So I do that, but then there's a couple of things I actually am proud of, and I will probably put online or whatever at one point. One was when I was sitting in the room, and I put that video out that because we had decent Wi-Fi one day, and I put that video out of me sitting there silently, you know, having myself sign a wet nap.
That was the most John thing. Just your whole it was the most quiet I've ever seen you. But
thank you.
It was your whole demeanor was the most John I've ever seen, just going, oh, I am seeing through what he is experiencing right now. And it was if anybody hasn't seen it, go up on your Facebook page. It is it's heartbreaking, also wonderful at the same time.
Thanks. So I did that, but I didn't do it like that. I did it. I brought the kid up and I'm like, all right, hey, and I was about to shake his hand. I'm like, oh, hey, we can't do that anymore. And then I had him like take the towel out. And then I said, you know, I've always wanted to do this. And I had music play and I started dancing around and I had the kids sign it and show it. And I place it, you know, did it and vanished the thing. And, with a thumb tip that I did not have when I got on the cruise, I realized that I did not, when I did it, the video, I realized that I did not actually have a thumb tip, that I needed to, that I was going to need a thumb tip if I was actually going to do some kind of this idea that I had. It would be a fun thing to, you know, to make light of the situation, to have a good kind of situation, without, you know, making fun of the seriousness of the situation or coronavirus in general. So I was like, okay, I need to do this. And there's the servers on the Disney Cruise Line. There are a lot of them that are like, have picked up a little bit of magic.
That's very true.
And there was a couple of them that I knew had done like, you know, had done the old, the right sticking in.
That was John miming a classic.
This is a podcast, John. This is a podcast.
Oh, it's a podcast. Oh, I see video. I see videos. So basically, the old jabbing thumb, you know, wave.
Mediocre execution of a classic magic vanishing trick.
Right. Yeah. So I've seen guys do that. And there was this one guy who I knew had done it. And I go literally hunting around the ship to find this guy. And I said, hey, do you happen to have can you openly talk about magic methods here? I guess you can, right?
We do all the time.
I mean, we try and dial it back.
I think everybody knows what a thumb tip is.
Okay.
No.
So I say,
non-magician.
Do you have that thing?
That secret thing.
And he's like, yeah, I have one. And I said, because you know, he's seen me on other ships and stuff. And I'm like, he's like, yeah, I can get it. But I'm working and I, I can't leave my position for another couple hours. And I go, oh, hold on. And I go find a manager and I say, I know this is going to sound strange, but could he come and can I go get this thing for my show? Because I think I need it for the show and the situation. And the manager's like, oh, no, of course, go do it. And so we go down to his room. So I've actually now seen like the crew quarters on the Disney Cruise Line, which I've never seen before, and how they stay. And I forgot. I did a crew show, too. I did a crew show when all this was happening. I did the crew show. So then I get the thing. And he's like, are you at work? Do you want the little silk? I'm like, no, I don't need the little silk. I got it. And so I go, and that's what I use. And that's what I use on stage. And I do the whole thing. And it's so, and it goes over really, really well. Because it was funny, because it was basically like the silken apple, but with, you know, in this case, an object that was very, very familiar.
So you vanished a wet wipe and you made it reappear where?
In the wet wipe canister.
So where they had just pulled it from.
Yeah.
Where they had just pulled it from. And they pull it out at the end. And they sign it. Yeah. So,
okay, that's
cool. I did that and that went over really well. And I had that as part of this thing. And then I did the cups and balls with the two kids on stage. Chopped up with the kids on stage. And then I did, like I said, Terry's trick, essentially. And then to close, I was like, you know, I'd always messed around with Lonnie Chevrolet's dental floss handling Gypsy Thread. And the Gypsy Thread is something that I have trying to think of material. It's something I've played around with, but never really found a take on and where it would actually make sense to me. And the sort of the more like highly, for lack of a better term, sappy presentations of it, you know, where it's like, this means this, this means this. It doesn't really fit, you know, really who I am or what I do. But at the same time, I think there's
you're not a wanker, basically. That's what you're saying.
But there are really good ones. I mean, when Peter Samuelson's routine is amazing. I really like that. And that's very emotional and heartfelt. Yeah. And there's ways to do it without it sounding like, you know, like, again, like you said,
Gotta give a tangential shout out to a good friend, Dave Lee from Melbourne, and Gypsy Thread. He's a sort of amateur magician, like great amateur magician. Doesn't do it professionally, but could if he wanted to. We did a duo act for many years. Gypsy Thread is his most hated magic routine, mainly because there was a period of about a year in his life where he came to the US and did a bit of traveling, and about two out of three shows he watched ended with Gypsy Thread as their emotional closer. And he's like, for fuck's sake, is every goddamn magician ending with Gypsy Thread as like an emotional story? And he just got so oversaturated with it, he just got sick of it.
It was really funny. I understand.
He's like, does everyone close with that?
Rob Zabrecki's is my favorite because it's just a string of regrets.
Rob's is great. I love Rob.
Rob's is
there's good ones.
My favorite take on it I've ever seen.
They're definitely good ones. Like I like. I like what Jessica Jane Peterson does with it. I think that she has found a way to actually make that work, and make it about the candle without actually not being an open flame and everything. So I mean, there's actually it's actually pretty good. So I mean, there's good stuff there. But so it's one of those things where like I'm messing around with it, but I know I'm like, screw it, I got to put something in. And so I come up with the routine, and I guess, Simon, you haven't watched the video. Have you watched the video?
No, not yet.
Simon doesn't see anything on social media. Even the things I post promoting the shows he's on, he doesn't see.
I see. I see his self-imposed social media blackout is working. I think that's very good. you should watch it. I'm actually very proud of this.
Check it out. Sounds good.
It's good. I did tear up a little. I'm not going to lie. I teared up a little bit because because I had just gotten off a ship 2 weeks earlier and had literally narrowly missed the experience you had just gone through. So the thought process behind what everybody in the audience was going through and you doing this very simple magic trick with dental floss and then your kicker at the end was, you know, it was very, very powerful. So I appreciated it.
So yeah, it feels good, and I'm doing this and I'm working on the routine, and I had the idea of talking about stuff without having to like say coronavirus and whatever. And so I open it up by saying, you know, did you have a good time? You know, at least one, there's one thing you can say about this cruise. It certainly was memorable. Right. You know, and that gets it. And the audience is with me. And I think if you understand the story and if you understand what's happening, everybody, this routine works, you know, far more impressively that
way. I should explain, because I know there are at least a number of non-magicians who watch this. Gypsy thread that we're talking about is a trick where you basically break up a piece of string into small pieces, then magically put them back together in one long piece of string. Very beautiful, visual, amazing trick.
What I like about Lonnie's thing, actually, as opposed to some of the other ones, is that it's, you're taking it off the dental floss, and it's not inherent that the that what you're doing is going to then restore the pieces.
Yeah, there's a little pieces is the natural state of dental floss.
Right. But with the balloon's like, here's a, you know, like here's a long piece of string. I'm going to break the string and now it goes back again. So, you know, that's, so it's a full circle as opposed to a surprise. So I'm doing this, and I'm now trying to I figured out this routine, and I had this really, I think very funny gag of where I say, you know, each piece represents something, and I talk about all the things for the ship, and I say, or the many shows I did for you, and then I start just taking off pieces one over and over and over and over again. So I write this up, and I'm pretty proud of it. And it's like midnight the night before we're going to do the show. And I get back to my room because I've been trying to, you know, let my pregnant wife sleep. And now I'm just like on earphones, like going through and like trying to put music to stuff and see if I can make it play. And what would work? And I'm like, I need an emotional musical beat for this ending. Because I don't want to be hampered by the music, that I need to keep time with the music, that means that's going to then like dictate where I have to be in the routine, where I have to be in the trick.
Yeah,
but because at this point I was okay, but I was not that extremely comfortable with the trick enough to be able to feel like I could automatically hit those musical beats no matter what. So I didn't want to put it to music, but I definitely wanted to have a musical ending. And as I'm one to do, I'm just listening to random Marvel Cinematic Universe soundtracks. And it just came to me, and I don't see how this has not been done yet, but I guess I got there first. So I take the pieces and I put them on, and I'm talking about how like these are all our memories, and the memories will all link us together. And I say, really? In fact, I have the perfect piece of music for this. And then the last part of the Endgame version of the theme, where Captain America finally says for the first time ever in the movies, "Avengers Assemble," and then the big punctuation after that. So I go and I whisper to the string, "Assemble," and then now this big music pops across as I'm doing the, you know, the stupid gypsy floss, and instant standing ovation, folks.
So that's, I'm going to call that, that's the pro tip right there. Instant standing ovation, use the Assemble Marvel Avengers theme.
It was kind of right amazing. There. I mean, for the situation and the cruise line that I'm on and everything
for
else.
2 weeks, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of amazing. And the video you can't see it super clearly, but you get the gist. You get the idea. Because it's just being filmed on actually William's cell phone in the back. But yeah, it was kind of amazing. But through all of this, like, they were like, well, we might be able to get you off of Puerto Vardo. No, we might be able to get you off of Cabo. And it, finally, they're just like, you're going to be here until the end of the cruise. There's no, you know. And my poor wife, she's worried about things. Getting the virus in her state is really... it's not good. It can do some serious damage to the kid, you know, and that's so we're really worried about that. So being on the ship, and she felt better the longer she was on. Actually, she felt a little better because then it was obvious there was no cases of the virus.
Exactly. It's a closed system. If there's no cases on it, a ship's actually the safest place to be because it's so sealed off.
Yeah, so we felt pretty decent about it by the time. And then so when they finally had said, okay, look, you're just going to be here to the end of the cruise and we're sorry. We're like, okay, sure, cool, got it. And there were, again, I can't stress how great they were about all this, because I was like, they're like, look, do you guys want another cabin? And they moved us from the normal performer cabin they put us in, which is a guest cabin, but to like a balcony cabin, so we can have a little space to move out on. They like, do you want to, we'll comp you dinner if you go to the nice restaurant. You know, they were super cool. And the one thing we needed really was just internet, because we needed to keep it. Yeah. So, and they're like, oh yeah, don't worry about it. We got it. We'll take care of it. So they were super great. And the whole thing's kind of insane. And there was a little bit of a slight bit of drama on the last day getting off, because they had said that most likely we would be getting off at a certain time. And just due to, I guess, making the triple checking that everybody was okay and whatever, we got off a little later. And so that kind of put a lot of panic. Vanessa said, I had just made the decision that if they had said we weren't going to be able to get off that day, that I was just going to break down and cry right there in the middle of everybody. I had made that decision. That's what I was going to do. I was just going to start crying. That did not happen. And we said, hey, they're like, oh, we'll fly you back. We're like, no, we'll drive back. If you just pay for a rental car, we'll drive back. We don't want to deal with the airplanes right now. So they were cool about that. Everything's good. So we're back home. We're safe. I just did my first grocery run. That was surreal.
Stocked up, got a lot of beans now.
We got some stuff. All the fresh produce is there. Everything's fine.
I know. Right?
It's just the toilet paper and, you know, weird. No olive oil. Olive oil is hard to find. There's one for you. Pasta. Pasta is hard.
On the internet by grocery store workers going, it's the weirdest shit that gets sold out. Like, the most bizarre things, like all the ketchup's gone, but we're still got heaps of canned tuna and just things like that. It's completely random.
I went to Ralph's. That was the first thing I grabbed last week, was a bunch of tuna. And I'm like, oh, that's going to be gone. And it was just boxes and boxes of tuna.
The heaps of tuna.
I guess perks of like living in an area where most people are vegetarian.
My pro tip is, when I've been stocking up on these still massively available, any vegan frozen meals, nutritious, vegetable based, and no one wants them.
Ah, nice. Right.
Heaps of vegan meals.
That's a great pro tip there. Go vegan during the apocalypse.
Look, my pro
time we want nutrition in our body.
Yeah. My pro tip is, use this time to be very creative. I've pumped out and have done more creative things this week than I have in, I think, several months. And it feels pretty good. So I'm just trying to stay positive about that. I'm sure, cut to 3 months later, I won't be as inspired.
Kill someone. Like, screw creativity.
But it is keeping me sane. And it's weird being, I've been talking about this with a lot of performers, that the fact that all of us no longer have an income for the next month or two, at least, is, in a weird way, it's scary, but it's also comforting in a weird way, just knowing everybody's in the same boat and we don't know what to do. So I hope that ends up being a comforting thing, as opposed to, holy crap, what are we going to do? Because that was me a couple days before. I had a complete freak out, and now when I'm in a space of what can you do? There's nothing you can do.
I gotta say, like, I feel I'm pretty lucky. I mean, my situation was, in a lot of ways, difficult and not optimum, and very, very fear and fear inducing. That said, Disney's going to pay me, and for being there, and I think that's kind of amazing. And because of that, that means that I had an extra week of work where everybody else was getting canceled left and right. And I was supposed to go from that to the loft, and the loft is now canceled. So it was, in a lot of ways, like, I got lucky. And I definitely look at the situation as that there, you know, I'm not a religious person, but counting my blessings that this is actually something that worked out in the long run for me, that I'm going to have an extra full week of, you know, of pay that I would not have had otherwise. And I have to look at that and be like, all right, that's it. You know, like, I can't complain. There's definitely people who are having far worse times and having things just completely just the bottom fall right out from under them. So I got pretty lucky there.
Well, good.
Yeah, what a time.
Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad things worked out, and I'm glad you're home safe.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Anything else, Simon?
I don't know. Yeah, no, I just wanted to hear that crazy story because, yeah, you're the, I mean, the number one person we know who actually got stuck on a ship, right? I know people, it's been happening out there, but you're the first actual real story of that.
Well, here's the thing. So Leslie Iwerks, who is the daughter of Iwerks, who basically created Mickey Mouse and all this, all these innovations in film technology. She's a documentary director, and she was on the cruise and talking about the Imagineering story, which is a show that she did for Disney Plus, and which is a great show. And when we were there and on the ship, we realized that because I got to actually spend a little time with her, and it was pretty great. Amazing person. We realized that with all the theme parks closing, with all of they had closed Disney stores, they had closed all of the hotels, the resorts, and all the other ships were going to dock and disembark way before we were, that we were essentially the last happiest place on Earth.
Yeah.
That this group of people we're getting to spend a little more time doing things that people would do in a theme parky Disney-like environment. Mm. Go to character meet and greets and, you know, like eat a Mickey-shaped ice cream and stuff like that. Like, they were going to get to do that for a few more days longer than anyone else in the world.
The last windowing bastion of Disney.
Yeah, it was kind of amazing. And that's, I could say that I was a part of all that.
Actually, I hope you get a writing credit in the documentary or in the real life story. And I wonder who's going to play John Armstrong.
I don't know.
Should be played by Kevin K. Dog Pernick.
It should be K. Like, exactly.
No, the K.
A couple of relevant questions. So when, John, a couple of ones actually that I think are really, because this is a great little case study of a lot of performers' nightmares of getting stuck in a place and you need more material. Question number one, when you're looking for music, what's your process for that? Where do you look for music? Do you have a big repository of royalty-free music? You can use all the old Disney stuff.
My go-to is karaokeversion.com.
Ah.
Because what you can do at karaokeversion.com is you can take pretty much any song that is singable, right?
Yeah.
And then get a version of it that has no lyrics. That has no singer. So you can actually just use the music so that you're not hampered by that song. Plus then if you own the original version, which has the music, and then you have the karaoke version, which is the exact same thing. It's not one of those things where it's like a sound alike. They have the BMI rights to do this. So they take the song and they just take out the lyrics. They just take them out.
Yeah.
So you could do a thing where, like, if you need to punch it, where like at the beginning is the song that everyone recognizes, and then it goes to I edit in the karaoke version for the time that you want to be able to speak over it without having to have the lyrics.
Just take lyrics out by combining the full version and the karaoke version.
Do that. So I use karaokeversion.com. Most things I will use services like Spotify and just my own iTunes library and things like that, just to find songs that I like, and then eventually I will buy the iTunes version. Buy the karaoke version. I really like the Scott Bradley's Postmodern Jukebox. That's so there are like more classical rearrangements of modern songs, and that really works for me. I wear a suit whenever I perform, but I'm very much not performing as a character or somebody who is an old timey person, but I always wear a suit, like three-piece suit with a pocket watch and whatnot. Like there's something about that just position that really works for me. So you can find all those Scott Bradley stuff sounds really good. And then if you get the karaoke version of those, they're fun and recognizable without them being recognizable, because I feel like a lot of times if the music that you're using is more recognizable and people care more about that than the actual magic that you're doing, that you're probably in there. That's probably
I've always been wary. I've usually noticed it being a bad choice for a lot of performers when they go with a karaoke version, but that's smart. Yeah. Because you don't want it to be too recognizable because
the Scott Bradley stuff really works.
Feel.
Really works for me. So that's where I find music. And as far, and then I, on the fly, I mean, I'm usually using Go Button, to do everything. I did that edit of the Avengers, that riff that everyone knows is called Portals, is the actual name of the track. And I just took and put it at into Go Button and just edited down the section that I need, which is the what Cap says.
Again, Go Button being a popular application for automatically playing music during one's own shows, used by I think all of us here. It's just good stuff. Great app.
Yeah, it's good. I recommend it.
If you're a working pro performer who can't always trust tech operators.
Well, none of us. What was your other? So it's fine.
You know, I here's the thing, guys. I'm going to be very, if I'm doing a show by myself, I'm going to use an audio aid. If I have a tech, I give them the iPad with the Go buttons Go button and I have them run it. I feel like I'd rather do that than run the whole show by myself. When I have a tech, especially techs that know my show, which I'm lucky enough to say that I work in venues that do, and techs that are savvy and very good at what they do. I'm not a big Audio 8 fan when I'm working in a gigantic theater with a 7-person sound crew. That makes no sense to me.
For those situations.
Yeah, that makes no sense to me. So I don't feel like that makes sense. But if I'm doing a solo show where I'm by myself in some ballroom, of course I'm going to use Audio 8 because that makes the most sense. But if I have a reliable tech in a real theater, I'm going to use the tech. And the best part about that system is that you just unplug, you just give them the Go Button thing. They plug it into, they just put that jack into their sound and they're done. And all they have to do is hit the goes. It's perfect. So.
And again, for context, Audio 8 being a very expensive, high-end, reliable remote control system commonly used in conjunction with the aforementioned.
And very good. I mean, I know this is not a dig on that system because I obviously have one and I obviously use one. That's not what I'm saying. I'm just saying I just feel like in a theater, if I have a tech, especially a tech that is going to be able to do my show and follow basic cues, which is just like hit go, I'm pretty sure I'd rather do that than have to worry about hitting a remote on my leg the entire time. What's your other question, though, Simon?
Other one is then in that situation of writing new material, coming up with ideas in a pinch, in a constrained environment. Is there a process you use, or do you just kind of look at shit and think about what might work?
Well, 5 years ago, or 6 years ago, no, I don't know, a while ago, when I decided that I was going to really focus all my energy in stand-up magic and not really put a lot of effort in close-up as much anymore. When I started doing that, I did what I have always done, which is just research the hell out of everything, which meant that I bought a lot of things and I bought a lot of books and I read a lot of books and I went online and I watched videos and I did everything I possibly could to get as much information just stockpiled into me as possible. And then I sort of weaned all that out to come up with the show that I would consider to be my show that I do all the time. But that stuff didn't go away and it didn't just leave my head. So I'm very fortunate and I decided that was a tack that I was going to take, because then I still knew that if I had X, Y, and Z, I could still do this. And I'm a big fan. I've been a subscriber, even though I've done a bunch of them. But I'm a big fan and subscriber to the Penguin Live series, and those at both the acts that they're doing now, and also the old videos that they did, those are more like lectures. And because I always had that with me, I always had I literally have 3 or 4 of them on my phone, and I had them in my hard drive on my computer. So if I needed to look something up, to be able in a pinch to be able to come up with enough stuff to be able to do, I could go back and reference that stuff. And it was always nice to have just a weekly reminder of okay, let's see what this guy is doing. Not my thing, but it's good just to see what else is out there. And that got me jogging my memory. And I'm only really talking about doing it on a pinch, like doing it in a situation like I was in where I had to come up with stuff. And I would say that now, like, my normal working repertoire, no joke, no exaggeration, is about 200 minutes of stand-up-y type material. Like, I can do about 200 minutes of stuff that would work in that venue, as long as I can get away with using a camera and a screen. Get rid of that, and probably now I'm down to more like about 120 minutes. But as long as I can do use a camera and a screen, I can play to a big room for about 200 minutes. And that took a long time to get to that, but that's my core stuff. And then everything I've done on top of that is all just been me, like, coming up with things at the last minute, going back to those old Penguin lectures, I also have an iPad that I keep with me at all times. I have two iPads that I have with me at all times. One has all my music on it that is just for that and just for the music type of stuff. And the other one is more like the entertainment iPad, but on my entertainment iPad is Tarbell, Bobo, Greater Magic, Card College, you name it. Any book that I could possibly get as a PDF, usually from library with a Y, .com or other sources, I bought L&L Publishing, so on and so forth. And so I have like just this huge searchable database of stuff, especially Tarbell. Like, just having the Tarbell thing is great. And if I not to keep plugging Penguin, but Dan Harlan's Penguin Tarbell course, mind blowing. Probably the greatest resource on video of material that of a brand of a huge breadth of stand-up material, and how to bring a lot of that stuff that people would read and go, top hat, handkerchief, you know, pocket watch, who's doing this, and how to bring that stuff into the modern era. It's super good, and I can't recommend that. Like, if you don't get anything else video wise, that's a really good resource. And the fact that I actually watch those things, but you just watch them to watch them. Like, I watched them and I went back through Tarbell and I read Tarbell and I understood and I learned as much as I possibly could about these concepts, like just using a servant. Close-up magicians don't think about using a servant. Servants, that's not a big thing that happens. You know, like, black art type stuff and, you know, like, you know, steals and ditching on stage and all. Anyway, I actually researching that, I felt far more prepared to be able to be like, okay, I can run around this ship and I can get some dental floss and I can get this, I can get this, I can get this, I can get this, and hopefully be able to come up with a show. So I think that's the answer to your question. I'm not sure.
That is a perfect answer. As Bart Simpson's karate teacher once said to him, before we break blocks of ice with our heads, first fill them with knowledge.
Yes.
And on that note...
Good tip.
Pro tip.
Well, thanks, John. I appreciate you taking the time. And
no, of course.
I'm glad you're safe and well. Simon, I'm glad you're safe and well and with all your boxes of organized things behind you. In the frame that the podcast world can't see right now.
My very organized apartment.
But we're gonna try to do some more of these, some more quarantine sessions, and we'll try to get some more people on. And I don't know, we're just gonna post them as is. I'm not gonna do any. Our schedule of twice a month is kind of out the window at this point. So we'll do what we can, and they're just gonna
put as many of them as possible. People need you guys. No, seriously, I mean this.
Quarantine missions.
Yeah.
No, I mean this. They need you guys. You are a port in a storm, an island in a sea of misery, and I can't tell you.
Yes.
I can't tell you how important I feel what you guys do is, and I mean it. I don't always agree with you two idiots, but I absolutely believe what you're doing is worthwhile and viable and something that is necessary. And in these times, getting through these times and being able to actually think about the emotion and stresses and everything else that we go through as performers just normally. And then now having the one outlet that we do not have anymore to be able to use, which is performing. That's usually the way we're able to like get ourselves right. Right. Mm-hmm. So this is a big thing, and you guys talking about it and talking to as many people as you can and putting stuff out there for us to listen to and be able to relate to, I can't support it more highly. I think it is necessary, especially now.
Oh, thanks. Appreciate that. It means a lot.
It's all true. It's all true.
Let's do it. The Quarantine Sessions, episode 1 through TBD.
If anybody wants some other outlets, I'm doing this live streaming talk show with Taylor Hughes every Wednesday now. We did one on Wednesday.
Do you drive to his house?
Well, I did, but now I can't anymore. So we will be doing it via Zoom.
Not legally.
All right. Well, my wife is thanking you right now when she hears this, because she was like, I can't believe he drove out there. That's not right. You can't do that.
Oh, trust me. We got lots of comments. I know. I figured it was fine because I was locked in my house for a week and Taylor was locked in his house for a week. And the only place I went was to Taylor. And I got permission. I'm like, is this okay? And he's like, we don't care. Please come over. So he was cool with it. And yeah, we got some angry comments. So don't worry. We're not doing that again.
Okay, good.
But yeah, I think it's going to be an interesting time to start to really. So, for example, one of the big trends we saw in Magic was, again, now we can mostly assume there's a screen available. Not always, but mostly. That's now more common than not. That didn't used to be the case. And a lot of acts, e.g., most famously Shin Lim, evolved to take advantage of that. And new genres of Magic have kind of been evolving. I think it's going to be a really interesting time to see many people starting to try and figure out the live streamed show format and the infinite a variety of ways you could approach that and what we're going to find are good ones, bad ones, in between ones. I've already been thinking about that a lot, of just things like directing it to the camera as opposed to the crowd in the room, if you have one, things like that. But difference between you and Taylor being in his shed playing to a camera versus in separate rooms playing to cameras and like, you know, how you structure the screens. Again, a lot of Twitch streamers have been doing this for quite a while now with gaming, but this is now a whole different format. So I don't know. It's interesting times. Let's lean into it together.
It is certainly interesting times.
We can finally do Magic Smackdown live on Twitch.
Actually, I just can't believe it. You know what? It may not be a bad idea.
We should figure out doing that.
Yeah. Get audience suggestions via Twitch chat. Adapt, like, you know, we can use objects in our apartments. You know, there's almost a format there.
There's got to be a way that you could do a create a live scoring thing too.
Yeah,
true.
Well, actually, we've already got one. Shit.
We'll see how quickly it crashes.
Yeah,
but you know, find out.
It's worth to try it. So,
yeah, you discover things through trying them and failing them, and then trying them and failing them less as gradually over time.
All learning right now. Great. Well, thank you for doing this, John. We appreciate it. And
no problem.
We will see you digitally soon, I'm sure.
See you digitally soon in the Ethernet.
Or the distance of 6 feet. Stay safe, everybody.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for listening to the show. Please give us 5 stars on the Apple Podcast. If you really like the show, you can donate a few bucks a month on our website, twomagiciansonemike.com, or become a monthly subscriber through our Patreon link. Thanks to all the people that support the show and keep it up and running. Be sure to follow us on the interwebs, @twomagiciansonemike. Thanks so much for listening. Have a great week.